Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
Kenosha was the epicenter of the campaign for president this week. President Trump visited Tuesday, Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden on Thursday. In Madison, Democrats in the legislature's Black Caucus demanded votes on Governor Tony Evers' police reform bills. But Republican leaders say those changes need study. And out-of-work Wisconsin residents are now eligible for an additional $300 weekly unemployment benefit from the federal government. Rewind, your week in review for September 4.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., at the start of the year, January 1, if I would have given you the odds that a president and his Democratic challenger would be in the city where you were born within 2 days, what odds would you have given me against that happening?
Odds for a normal campaign swing, but because of a violent protest that led to violence in the streets, the shooting of two protesters by somebody who came in to protect businesses, that would never be my wildest dreams.
Okay.
Kenosha, remember Kenosha County, it has gone blue, or had gone blue in every presidential election going back, even to when Reagan won Wisconsin, it went blue. Trump, though, won it in 2016 by 238 votes. So it's become a key county, especially in off-year elections. It's been pretty blue in presidential ones. We see it become more swingy. So I would be surprised by a visit to Kenosha County because of that. But it becoming the epicenter of national politics for a couple of days, that would have been my wildest dreams.
Okay. Kenosha won. President Trump, excuse me, as you just said, won Kenosha County by 238 votes. But you and I both looked it up. Hillary Clinton won City of Kenosha by 7,000 votes. So without the tragedy of the Jacob Blake shooting, no chance that a city of 100,000 south of Milwaukee, north of Chicago would have hosted both presidential candidates of 60 days out, right?
Well, you know, like I could have seen him coming through because, you know, Clinton suffered the same problem in Kenosha that she did in Milwaukee, where you saw a significant drop off in urban areas. So I could see like coming to Kenosha as a secondary visit, like, but you would think they would hit Trump in Green Bay, Trump in the Fox Valley, Trump out in La Crosse, you know, Biden in Milwaukee, Biden in Madison to drive the base numbers. But having Kenosha becoming this, again, the focus of the national political discussion, that really wasn't the cards, I don't think, prior to what happened with the shooting of Jacob Blake.
Well, we're going to go in depth to both of those visits, but I just want to ask you. I mean, doesn't this underscore again how Wisconsin is a battleground state? Were you surprised that Trump announced I'm going to come to Kenosha 9 or 10 days after that tragic incident?
No, it plays into his law and order theme. I mean, think about it. Think about what Trump talked about. He didn't talk about like healing. He didn't talk about like. What happened with Jacob Blake, or whether he didn't meet with Jacob Blake's family. He talked about anti-police and anti-American, in his words, protests, leading to violence, these problems in the streets, and how he alone can fix it, essentially. That was the message. And it's a place that was reeling from what happened. And he stepped in to say, one, he can fix it. And two, look what happened when the National Guard came in. Now, there's a little bit of a rub there, right? Because the Guard's under the governor's control. And Governor Evers authorized the Guard to go in on Monday after the shooting, doubled it on Tuesday, doubled it on Wednesday. But in that process, there was this kind of rift with the White House about sending in federal agents and other things. So it's Trump's trying to take credit for like the calm coming. There's no doubt the calm happened after the shooting, Kyle Rittenhouse shooting three protesters, killing two, and more troops coming the next day. But whether that's the credit to the White House, the governor, they're both kind of talking about that a little bit and muddying the water.
With the announcement of Trump coming, did Mr. Biden have any choice but to then 2 days later also come to Kenosha, do you think? We're talking overview here before we go in depth of these visits.
Well, think about it. Biden didn't come to Wisconsin just a couple weeks ago to accept the nomination from his party. Would it come to Milwaukee because of the travel concerns over COVID-19? What's changed in the 2 weeks since that happened for Biden to visit? Well, obviously there are theories that he's seen some of these pollings that suggest there's an issue going on, and he has to get out there and start being out in the public. But it's also a place that, if you think about the discussion of who do you trust more to keep you safe, who do you trust more on criminal justice issues, the polls post Kenosha have been favorable to Biden. This is a place you go and talk about coming together, talk about we need to address police issues, but also heal, different message that more catered toward his audience than what Trump had to say.
Okay, that's enough of the overview. Now let's go in depth. Because he's the president, let's hear from the president what he said in Kenosha, please.
So I came to thank the law enforcement, the police, they're incredible. And the National Guard has been truly amazing. They all got together, they coalesced. The minute they got here, it was over. When I called the governor, I wish he would have accepted night one instead of night three. Because night one, those stores would still be up. But he's better than many. He accepted, in all fairness to the governor, he accepted. And when he accepted, it all ended. So I want to thank the governor, and I want to thank everybody. But in particular, I want to thank your police and your great people that from law enforcement. They've done a fantastic job. There was love on the streets, I can tell you, of Wisconsin when we were coming in. There was love on the streets. And so many African Americans, Hispanic Americans, I can see waving. Pastor, it was so beautiful to see. They want to have safety. So I'm committed to helping Kenosha rebuild. We all are. We will provide $1 million to the Kenosha law enforcement so that you have some extra money to go out and do what you have to do. You took a rough, it was a rough week, to put it mildly, and you've done it incredibly well. I'm also providing nearly $4 million to support these small businesses that I talked about today that got burned up, burned down. And we're going to be providing over $42 million to support public safety statewide, including direct support for law enforcement and funding for additional prosecutors to punish criminals and resources to provide services to victims of crime. And that was Bill Barr wanted that money put in. So that's $42 million that'll help with prosecutors and all of the other things that are so important to you. You need that.
Jer, I want to focus on something the president said. Had Governor Evers agreed on night one instead of night three, the president's terms, quote, those stores would not have been burned to the ground. Now, you and I saw the release from the governor's office. Governor Evers agreed, as you said earlier, on Monday. So the president was just wrong when he talked about it took three calls to Governor Evers to bring out the guard, correct?
So remember, the locals last week said that they kind of dropped the ball, in their words, of getting the first request into the state. The way it works in Wisconsin is your emergency management office, your local emergency management office, makes the request to the state to the National Guard come in. That call came in around 3 a.m. So the shooting was on that Sunday night. Around 3 a.m., early Monday morning, the call came in for the guard. They were there by Monday night, 125 troops. Now, you could raise questions about the level that were sent and those kinds of things, but they were there the first night after they'd been requested. Then Evers doubled it from 125 to 250 on Tuesday. Yep. Tuesday was the day that the governor spoke with the White House, where they offered to bring in Homeland Security agents. Obviously, we saw that in Portland. The governor said no thanks, then doubled it to 500 on that Wednesday when they had another conversation, looks like, and whatnot. So again, the president's trying to take credit for the calm because he wants that message that he can fix it. He's the one who can come in and clean this stuff up when there are problems like this country.
Okay, and I want to talk about the money that he talked about on that clip. $42 billion for public safety statewide, but I think he also said $4 million for Kenosha. And Governor Evers, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corp, said we're going to offer $1 million in no-interest loans to Kenosha businesses. So there's some President Trump also brought dollars, correct?
Yes, but I haven't got details of where those dollars are coming from or if they were already in an allocation somewhere, if they're new dollars. That wasn't quite clear. They just kind of said, you're getting this money, but haven't given us details since then. I've asked for a follow-up and haven't got any back from them. Now, you know, we'll see. But, you know, I mean, the president wants to send a message of there's a problem. I'm here to fix it.
Okay. What did you think of that roundtable? The president in the middle, police chief, sheriff, two pastors. This is pretty standard roundtable for the president stressing law and order, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and he tried to make a message. That, and it's weird, like his conversation about Governor Evers, he's been kind of complimentary sometimes, but also like critical, where he said, I think he was in Latrobe, Pennsylvania yesterday, and like, you know, kind of took a shot at the governor. But other places he said he was better than most Democratic governors or something like that. And he came around. I don't know, it's been a weird message from the president about the governor and how they may have worked together or even conversed about Kenosha.
One final thing on the president's visit. He said he did not talk to members of Jacob Blake's family because they wanted attorneys to sit in on that call. How do you think that goes over?
Well, the family said that they wanted to have, you know, attorneys to monitor the conversation. It kind of fits in with the president's message, right? It's not really about kind of what Biden's talking about. It's more about the law and order piece and the protest piece. These protesters have gotten out of hand. There's violence in the streets. That Trump's guy's going to fix it.
That's okay. And you had Democrats, our Democratic governor. You had the Democratic mayor, John Antaramian, a former member of the state assembly, saying, Mr. President, please don't come now. Speaker Robin Voss then put out a press release saying, Governor, if you said the President Trump should not come now, you should also say the same thing to Mr. Biden. And I heard on National Public Radio the governor being interviewed saying, I sent the same letter to Mr. Biden. Any PS on that before we go to a look at Mr. Biden's visit, JR?
No, the governor said he spoke with Biden, and I think it's something like you said he read from a similar letter, or read from that letter to President Trump to Biden. So the governor wasn't very as vocal or as upfront about the Biden thing. It kind of came after Biden had announced, whereas when Trump announced he was coming, he had a letter the next day. So a little bit different, but, you know, if they were going to come, I don't think the governor's wishes really weighed much with either Trump or Biden about what they were going to do when it comes to Kenosha.
Okay. President visited on Tuesday. Now let's hear what Democratic presidential nominee, former Vice President Joe Biden, said at a socially distanced church event in Kenosha yesterday. Please.
We're going to address the original sin of this country. 400 years old. It's the original sin, slavery, and all the vestiges of it. I can't guarantee you everything gets solved in 4 years, but I guarantee you one thing, it'll be a whole heck of a lot better. We'll move a lot further down the road, because this is the first chance we've had in a generation, in my view, to deal and cut another slice off institutional racism. This generation is a different generation. They're the least prejudiced, the most optimistic, the best educated, the most desirable of change of any generation. So we can't let them down. The country's ready. And if they're not, it doesn't matter, because there are certain things I ain't gonna change. There are certain things worth losing over. And this is something worth losing over if we have to, but we're not going to lose.
Mr. Biden, as we just heard, said it's time for this nation to end the, his words, original sin of slavery. JR, first visit by a Democratic presidential candidate to the great state of Wisconsin since 2012, right?
Yes.
Well?
Yes. Nominee, yeah, yes.
Yeah, the actual nominee. You think we'll see Mr. Biden back in this cliffhanger state?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we're at tipping point, so he's going to come back. Also, like a different tone from Joe Biden and from Donald Trump, different focus, not nearly the crowds, like as with Trump. Now, part of it maybe had been that the Biden campaign kind of kept us in the dark by exactly where he was going till the last minute. But they were talking more about conciliatory things, about addressing police policies. Different audience for the vice president than for the president and what he was trying to get across in these visits.
And Mr. Biden met with the family of Jacob Blake. I think he also had a telephone call with Mr. Blake. And you reported it was politics that on his way out, he went to Wauwatosa for what type of an event, JR?
Speak with educators. You know, obviously his wife, Jill Biden, is an educator. So, you know, again, different messages coming from them than coming from the Trump campaign while they were in town. Now, don't forget, they've got Vice President Mike Pence coming to on Alaska on Monday. So that is going to be, I believe, Pence's seventh visit to Wisconsin this year. This is just teeing up. It's going to be a busy fall for us in terms of these visits from the tickets themselves and from surrogates, because we matter.
Right. Okay, now let's turn to what happened in Madison, or maybe what didn't happen. The governor, as we reported, issued a special session call for the legislature to act on his 9 bills on policing reform on Monday. Well, let's hear first from the members of the legislature's Black Caucus asking for votes, then Assembly Majority Leader Steinicke and State Senator Van Wongard, who's taking the lead on police reforming packages in the Senate. Let's just listen to their response before we talk about the lack of action. Please.
We are not asking for anything major from our colleagues. We're asking for fairness and equity in a system that needs to be accountable. And if the state legislature is rejecting these 9 bills from the governor, if they are going to gavel in and gavel out and not give the seriousness this issue deserves, that means that we must move forward even with bigger changes.
Republicans need to find the morality to address these issues, not just the use of force reform, but the disparities facing our communities of color. We don't need a study committee to verify what we already know. We need action, and we need Republicans to do their damn jobs.
What do you say to those who say you should be acting today, you should have a vote and debate today?
Well, it's just not how it works. Even with packages of bills like this, typically what happens is you refer it to a committee. The committee would review it, take testimony, have hearings, schedule a vote on it before it would ever get to the floor. So instead of referring it to a committee, which we all know committees aren't really working right now, we're going to refer it to the task force. The task force is going to have the responsibility of vetting this legislation and then hopefully coming up with more ideas that can help solve this issue long term.
Part of the problem is getting all the stakeholders together to make sure you don't create a piece of legislation that is going to have negative unintended consequences for somebody else. Because it doesn't do you much good to fix one issue and then create a bigger issue someplace else. By spring of next year, my goal is that's my drop dead date to get it done.
Chair, I want to focus on two things in that clip. Assembly Majority Leader Steinicke said, when asked, why aren't you guys voting since the governor did issue a special call? Quote, that's not how it works. Secondly, when I had a newsmaker's interview with Senator Van Wongard, I said, look, we have specific bill drafts here. You have bill drafts. You say you have Senator Wongard, some Democratic buy-in from, he mentioned Senator Lena Taylor. So why didn't at least the Senate vote on specific bill drafts ready potentially for Senate votes this week, JR?
Well, a couple of reasons. One, let's be honest, a fall floor period ahead of an election is rare, if not unprecedented. I don't remember the last time they met, August, September, October, before an election. Two, there's a different dynamic for Republicans and Democrats in this issue. Think about the districts Republicans represent. They're largely rural, small cities, small towns, suburban areas, right?
Yes, yes.
When I talk to Republicans, their districts, their police backers, don't have the same issues that you're seeing in a Kenosha or a Milwaukee or a Minneapolis. Now, they may have some of the same challenges, but it's not the same kind of thing. So in their minds, if they come in and vote for a bunch of overhauls of police policy, they run the risk of alienating their law enforcement back home. Number two, their constituents aren't talking about, you know, police policy. They're talking about safety. They're seeing the president's message as resonating because these are Republican districts. And they're going, okay, I'm not really going to have anything that's going to benefit me with my constituents by voting for a bunch of things that may alienate them. Now, suburban Republicans, a little bit different story. Your best bet, some Republicans have told me, is to say show that you are concerned about these issues that have, you know, led these problems with policing policies, but also make clear that you also back law enforcement to walk that line. It's a different story for Democrats. They represent urban areas where their constituents are concerned about these things. It's a different dynamic for them.
Well, Senator Wongard told me he really hopes to have a consensus on his package for the spring session. I asked about January 1. He sounded very doubtful about that. So don't we have, in essence, two trains running here? You have Senator Wongard developing, working very hard on his package, and then you have the Speaker's task force. Assembly Majority Leader Steinke will head it, but the next announcement by Assembly Republicans will be members of that task force. So do you agree with me on kind of two trains running here imagery?
Oh, and don't forget Scott Fitzgerald, who was all queued up to lead the legislature in the span of the several months because he's pretty much the favorite to become a member of Congress. He wants new legislation that would up the penalties for attacks on first responders. I mean, there are a couple of trains, but there are also a lot of competing interests. And there are several dozen bills that may get considered in the end. What I don't know is how is it going to play out post-January, because what will the conversation be like then? Will this issue have died down? Will it be inflamed? And then we have more incidents, but let's hope not. But there's all kinds of things about that, that the farther you get away from something happening, the less motivation there is to deal with it.
Okay, and I just have a P.S. One of Senator Van Wongarden's bills would penalize cities who defund the police. In other words, they shift some of the financial resources away from police. They would lose state shared aid. Okay, let's turn. Please, go ahead.
We have, if you cut your budget, what's that mean? If you have to cut your budget across the board by 2% to make the books balance, what's that mean if you're under Wongard's bill? That's one of the concerns I've heard from others about an approach like that.
Okay. All right. New subject. The governor applied for, it took a few days, but the governor applied for this additional $300 federal benefit if you're unemployed and you qualify for the state maximum $370, potentially an additional $300. Remember, this had been $600. That ended in July. No one knows when that's going to start. Any surprises in the governor asking and being given approval by FEMA to start paying this $300 additional stipend, JR?
No, I mean, states were kind of hesitant to apply at first because it wasn't clear what you had to do. I mean, at first it sounded like you had to give them an extra, like if you were the state, you had to pay an extra $100 per person unemployed, get the $300 in federal money. Then the feds changed and said, no, as long as you're paying them at least $100 from your normal UI payment, you can get the extra $300 from the feds. Now don't forget, if you're getting $90 a week from the state, you don't qualify for this additional money. A couple things to remember as well. It is not open-ended. The state got approved for 3 weeks of this benefit. I was told by DWD, who's encouraged to apply for a fourth week. It will take, however, 6 to 8 weeks to program the system to have you get the money. So it's not going to show up anytime soon. And under the program, there's $44 billion, I think, under FEMA to pay for these extended benefits. This will last as long as that money is there. So 4 weeks looks like a good bet right now, but 5, 6, 7 is not guaranteed. And oh, by the way, we still have the possibility of some kind of grand bargain out in Congress that would make some payments retroactive after that $600 additional federal money went away in July.
Because Speaker Pelosi still wants to go back to the $600 per week in addition to this to the state benefit, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. All right. One more topic. The Fiscal Bureau and DOR agreed on tax collections, general fund tax collections, not transportation fund tax collections, for the year that ended on June 30. They were up slightly, 1%. They were less than, let me get it right, 0.6% less than the projections issued in January. How much good news was this? How much dancing in the Capitol, JR?
I don't know if they were dancing, but it's good news because you don't have to do a budget repair bill anytime soon. Let's keep remember here. What we're talking about is if you look at the budget when it was signed in July of 19, we are up compared to that estimate right before that budget signing. We're off slightly from what happened in January when the fiscal said, hey, things are going pretty gangbusters right now. We're just even more money than we thought we were going to have in May. We're basically back to where we were in 19 saying, okay, we're seeing growth, but it's not necessarily gangbusters. A couple of things. We had enough of a surplus for that first year that we actually had a deposit in the rainy day fund. So that tells you that even with the 3 months of the pandemic roiling the last quarter of the Wisconsin economy that fiscal year, we made it out okay. The question becomes, how does that roll into 2021? Does the economy recover quickly and we're all okay? Does the floor drop out at some point? Will it be federal help for lost revenues? It probably sets up a difficult 21-23 budget, but that is eons from now at this point. The things to watch are in October, we'll get an accounting of expenditures during 1920. Remember, yes, the Stevens administration has taken steps to try and cut money. And then in November, we'll get a new projection of how things should go in 2021 and set up 21-23. So we got a couple of big benchmarks coming this fall that'll tell us our budget situation going forward.
Okay, but I just want to give a new a number that the Fiscal Bureau gave us for the what's called the Budget Stabilization Fund, the Rainy Day Fund, whatever you want to call it. With the additional increase, a 1% increase in general fund tax collections in the year ended June 30, that allowed an additional $106 million to go to the Rainy Day Fund, taking it to $760 million, which is available, or whatever amount of that is available to cover shortfalls in tax collections in the current fiscal year, right?
Yeah. And don't forget, the reason why we're getting these numbers in late August or early September is because they pushed back the tax day until July 15th. Yes. So things are kind of delayed a little bit in that regard, but we're in good shape. We're not in great shape. That's the bottom line about the budget.
Okay, and that's a good way to end that segment. JR, you give the stock picker the day off. I understand that, but update me. Kanye West, on or off the ballot, fighting this in state, federal court, and what's with the Green Party candidate? Please.
So, one, Kanye West filed a lawsuit late last Friday in Brown County Circuit Court seeking to overturn the Elections Commission decision that he was too late in filing his nomination papers.
He filed in state court, right? In Brown County Circuit Court, excuse me.
Department of Justice had that moved to federal court. A federal judge has now moved that, said no, it's a state issue, moved it back to Brown County Court. There's a motion pending to dismiss that lawsuit from the Democrats. So we have that all going on. Then state Supreme Court, the Green Party late yesterday, filed a request for original action for the state Supreme Court to rule it should be on the ballot. The Supreme Court has set a Tuesday deadline for the commission to respond to that. Here's the real issue to kind of look at, Steve. Ballots are being printed as we speak. The process began this week. And what both West and the Green Party are seeking with Howie Hawkins is be placed on that ballot. The question becomes to the courts, at what point have we gone too far in the printing process to say, okay, we're going to halt it, toss out different ballots were printed, and redo new ones, and then begin the project printing process over. We have deadlines coming up. September 16th, county clerks must deliver to municipal clerks the ballots that are printed. So on the 17th, they can be mailed out to people of absentee ballot requests already on file. Right. September 19th, clerks have to mail out to military and overseas voters these ballots to meet a federal law. There's a narrow window here. Oh, and don't forget, the Elections Commission ruled on August 20th that these guys weren't on the ballot. The Green Party took 2 full weeks to file its lawsuit. Kanye West took a full week to file a lawsuit. How does that play in the court's mind about the urgency to address this? And oh, by the way, we have a huge issue looming about getting ballots in on time this fall. The less time you have on the front end, the less time you have on the back end to get these things out and back, it could be a crunch. And oh, one last thing, we're already near 1 million absentee ballots requested for the November election, according to the Elections Commission.
Okay. Is there an immediate court date, like next week, you and I will be following for next week's show?
State Supreme Court today has set the deadline of Tuesday for the commission to respond.
Okay.
The Green Party. The Green Party also sought an emergency restraining order to stop the printing of ballots. That was not granted in what we saw this morning, so that's not there. But I don't see a court hearing just yet with the Brown County case where things are pending. The original suit filed last Friday asked to have this commission respond within 20 days. Well, that 20 days is right around the deadline for all these things to happen, these ballots. So we are in a time crunch right now. Their ballots in Wisconsin because these late lawsuits.
Okay, we got less than a minute, but JR, I just want to explain. The Elections Commission mailed out 2.6 mailings, and I went back to Megan Wolf's press conference. She says, these are not ballots. They're making people aware of the three ways you can vote. So let's just make it clear exactly what people are, 2.6 million voters are getting in the mail this week. We got about 20 seconds, please.
If you don't have a ballot request for absentee ballot on file, you're going to get a mailer. It basically allows you to fill it out and send it in and get an absentee ballot. You send that in, they send you a ballot. You don't send it in, they don't send you a ballot. Oh, by the way, we had about 80% of our ballots in the August election cast via absentee. Yeah. Extremely high. The question is, how will November look in terms of absentee ballots that are mailed in? We haven't seen that kind of a mail-in effort before in Wisconsin elections.
Okay. And Megan Wolf said, voters, three ways to vote in person at the polls. Drop off an absentee ballot at your clerk's office. Absentee ballot in the mail. I'm Steve Walters.
In person voting too.
JR, thank you. And with that, I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for September 4. Good show, man. Thank you.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.